The Vampire Kitty Cat Chronicles, Chapter 6, That Wacky Lester. The raw, red-black claw slashes on both sides of Lester's neck looked pretty gruesome. Perhaps I had been a little too aggressive in dealing with him. I had to escape again, but I worried that he'd seen my best moves. I let him know my irritation with a growl. Lester flashed his fangs in a smile and said, "Good kitty." "What?" I checked behind me to see if some other cat was there, but there was just me. I noticed his hearse parked nearby. Lester looked down at Nasty. His voice dripping with derision, he said, "See that, Nosferatu? He didn't even flinch when I growled, and he knows how to growl back." Nasty hung his head. While I doubted he understood the words, even a dog couldn't miss the tone. Personally, I thought it was about time a cat was held up as an example to a dog. The towering vampire took a step toward me. I backed away, and he stopped. He said, "Don't be afraid, kitty cat. I've changed my mind about you." Meg called from the van, "Lester, leave him alone." He paid her no mind, and took another step toward me. I held my ground, although it hurt my neck to look up at him. He said, "I've realized that I asked the wrong one to join me when I first met you and that female. You're the bold one. You're the one to be at my side, stalking hapless victims and then plunging our fangs into soft flesh." Lester stretched his arm out, his black cape flashing crimson lining, and pointed to his hearse. "Come with me and know the joy of striking terror in the night." Where did he get his dialogue? I had to admit, though, that the idea of striking terror in the night had appeal. When you're less than a foot tall and weigh only 15 pounds, you feel like there's a target painted on you for your whole life. I had more than one kick aimed at me, and a few that connected. The idea of creating fear instead of feeling it was tempting. But I'd have to listen to Lester yammer about the dark path. Meg came to us, though she went wide of Lester and Nasty by a few yards. Nasty turned his head and opened his yap as if to growl. Nothing. He still didn't get it. Dogs. She said, "Patch, Tim and Tom want us to come with them to their townhouse. We'll be safe there." Ha! What need did a bold beast such as I, a terror of the night, have for safety? Egads, I was starting to sound like Lester. They have plenty of room, and we could be comfortable. On the other paw, comfort is a major thing with cats, mainly because we sleep so much. I started toward her. Lester moved to cut me off, but he tripped over Nasty, toppled like a felled tree, and belly-flopped on the concrete floor. Meg reached out to me and said, "Let's go." Give old Lester credit. He was determined. He scrambled to his feet and surprised me by lunging at Meg instead of me. He wrapped an arm around her neck and said, "I'm tired of your interference." He looked at me. "I wonder how your kitty cat would feel about seeing you with a broken neck, your head flopping around like a rag doll." Darned if he wasn't threatening me with harm to Meg. Lester had unsuspected depths. Very few people get how much we cats really understand. Despite that, what he was doing decided me against going with him. It's not good to be around someone that large who has anger management issues. But what to do? Tim, or was it Tom, got out of the passenger seat and approached Lester. "You're opening yourself up to a big lawsuit, and I'll warn you, we win all of our cases." Lester laughed. "In what court?" Taking out a cell phone, Tom, or was it Tim, said, "I'll call the police." "Go ahead. I'll just snap her neck and leave. Then you can explain to them what happened. I'm sure they'll love it when you start babbling about vampires." Tim, or was it Tom, pocketed his phone. Okay, it was up to me. Figuring it wouldn't be all that hard to escape from Lester at some point, I walked toward his hearse. Lester went ahead of me, hauling Meg with him, his arm still around her neck. He opened the passenger side door for me. Nasty moved toward the door, but Lester stuck a foot out to block him. Our friend Patch, first. The look Nasty gave me as I approached suggested that escaping sooner rather than later would be a fine idea. I jumped up on the front seat, sat, and looked up at Lester. But he didn't release Meg. He clamped his huge hands on the sides of her head like a vice. She grabbed his wrists and pulled. He laughed. She tried to kick his shins with her heels, but he just lifted her clear of the ground and her legs flailed, useless. He said to her, "You've been rude to me ever since we met, you stiff-necked little bitch. I'd like to see how you act when your cervical vertebrae are fragments, and the only thing you'll ever look at directly again are your toes." The bastard. I sprang toward him, hoping to hook into one of his arms. But Lester anticipated me. He lifted a foot the size of a litter box, and I smacked into it in midair. I slammed back into the hearse, and he kicked the door shut. Paws on the window. I watched Lester brace to twist Meg's neck. I scratched at the glass, hoping to distract him, anything to stop him. The stairwell door burst open, crashed into the wall with a booming clang, and Bruce stepped out. He pulled up short when he saw what was going on, then stumbled forward when Sammy ran into him from behind. Sammy shouted,
"Where's the cat? Get the cat!"
Excitable little guy. I jumped to the driver's seat and honked the horn, then ran back to the window. Bruce, bless his two active brain cells, pointed at me and said, "K-k-k-k-k." Sammy yelled,
"Get him!"
Bruce took off in a run toward the hearse. Lester tossed Meg at Bruce, which was like throwing a Nerf ball at a locomotive. She rebounded off of him and hurtled toward the hearse to flatten against the passenger door, eye to eye with me. She wrenched the door open. I jumped out and found Lester rushing at me from one side, arms outstretched, and Bruce doing the same from the other. If I timed it right, I slowed just a little. They closed. I slowed. They lunged. I put on a burst of speed. I looked back to see a wonderful collision. The two enormous vampires grappled on the concrete floor. Meg ran toward the van where Tom, or was it Tim, stood by the open door, urging her on. She cried, "Patch!" Then a hand caught me by the tail and lifted. Hanging several feet off the floor, I swiveled around and found myself face to face with Sammy. He grinned.
"Gotcha."
Sammy pulled out his switchblade, clicked it open, and held the blade against the base of my tail. He said,
"I think this would make a nice souvenir to remember you by."
Helpless gives only the palest hint of how it feels to be dangled in the air by your tail. Having it cut off would avoid that problem in the future, but I hoped a less radical solution would come along. Soon, Meg called out, "Hold it." Sammy and I looked her way. She strode toward us, digging into her purse. "Hold it right there." She pulled out a cell phone and stopped a few feet away. She opened the phone, aimed it at us, and said, "Say cheese." She pushed a button, examined the phone screen, and said, "That ought to do it." She folded the phone and held it up. "This little snapshot, friend Sammy, will soon be emailed to the Bloomsburg Humane Society and the police department. The email will include your name and the address of the AVA. Sammy yelled,
"Bruce!"
Bruce's voice was smothered because he had Lester's forearm in his mouth as Lester tried to choke him from behind, but I'm pretty sure he said, "Mmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmm who stood beside the van's passenger door. He caught it and passed it inside to his brother. She turned back to Sammy and said, "I believe it's time you let my friend Patch go." Sammy gazed into my eyes. The man exuded hate. He tightened his grip on my tail. Meg said, "Tom, email that picture." Sammy's eyes shifted. I rotated and could see a lawyer twin pressing keys on Meg's phone. Sammy said to her,
"I'd probably get vampire fleas from it anyway."
He dropped me, and I landed on all 4 feet. I turned to face him, and he pointed his knife down at me. Backing a step, he said,
"I let him go. but I won't be responsible for what happens if he attacks me.
Behind him, Bruce and Lester disentangled, rolled apart, and lumbered to their feet. Lester surveyed us and said, "Bah!" He aimed a long forefinger at Meg and then turned it on me. "You will live, come to regret crossing the vampire Lestat. I have eternity to collect my revenge." He tossed Nasty into his hearse, got in and slammed the door, then gunned the engine and back toward Meg, who scooted out of the way. She gave his rear fender a kick, and he peeled out. I went to Meg and rubbed against her leg to thank her for saving me from mutilation. She leaned down and ran a hand over my back. "I owed you one, Patch." She gestured at the van. "Shall we?" I ran ahead and leaped into the van, and then onto the seat next to Seiko. She smiled at me, and Tom, or was it Tim, said from the driver's seat, "Patch, you may not have 9 lives anymore, but you do pretty well." Meg sat beside me and closed the side door. We watched Sammy shout at Bruce, waving his arms as if he wanted to take flight. Meg said, "Now what, Tim? I think I've worn out my welcome at the American Vampire Association." As he pulled away, the driver turned back to us. I was relieved to have their identity straight, and said, "To our place. I think it's time for a midnight snack." I made a mental note. Tim was the striped tie. Tom handed her phone back. "Would you show me how to see the picture you took? I couldn't figure it out." She said, "Oh, this isn't a camera phone, but it was all I could think of to do." Continued possession of my tale had been riding on a bluff? My associate had some moxie. Now that I was no longer threatened with dismemberment, I noticed that the burn in my belly had rekindled. Imagine the sensation of being ravenous, that consuming need that fills your stomach like a gas, and then set fire to it. Luckily, their townhouse was only a few minutes away. A garage door opened on the ground floor level, and we cruised in. Upstairs, Tom led us to a kitchen the size of the first floor of Amy's townhouse. As nearly as I could tell from floor level, every surface gleamed. Of course, with vampires, there was little use for a kitchen. Like at the AVA headquarters, windows were covered with heavy black curtains. Tom took 5 bottles of V1 from a stack of cases of the stuff in a pantry and heated them in a microwave. This time I got a whole bottle in a bowl, and I managed to down it all. What a rush! Seiko lifted her bottle in my direction and said, "To you, Patch." Meg chugged her bottle. Being a cat, I relaxed and enjoyed it. For a couple of minutes, the only sound in the room was my purr. Then Meg examined her empty bottle and her mouth turned down. She said to Tim, "This blood, do they kill people? Where do..." Tim said, "Oh, this isn't human blood. Lordy, we're not uncivilized. It's a product of a vampire-owned slaughterhouse. Vampires have them all over the country. This is from animals." That sounded good, it being what came naturally to me. Meg said, "I can live with that." My heart was still beating and I was still purring when Meg picked me up, cradled me in her arms, and followed the lawyers to a den with book-lined walls and lots of leather-covered furniture. Seiko went to the bookshelves, and Meg sat in an armchair with me in her lap. She said to the lawyers, "Thank you for feeding us. I'll pay you back as soon as I can find a job." I guess I blew the one at the AVA. Tom, Polka Dot Tie, exchanged glances with Tim and said, "Maybe there's another one waiting for you." Now that I knew which was who, I noticed that Tim had a little mole on his cheek that Tom didn't. Now I could tell them apart without ties. Tim said, "Yes, we've been thinking." He looked at Tom. "Haven't we, Tom?" "Yes, indeedy, about the idea of," Tim said, "running for city council. You'd make a fine candidate." Meg said, "Oh, I didn't really mean that. I was just pissed off at Sammy's attitude." She paused and said, "Really? Out the vampires?" Seiko said, "Do it, Meg. You were right. We have rights. We're citizens." "But how? I mean, there's this little problem of the sun coming up every day." Tim said, "We can get around that. We have a paralegal surrogate, a breather, who does things for us in the daytime. He can sign you up. We can use radio and television to get the word out, and you can have rallies after dark." Tom said, and will also sue the state for 24-hour access to all public venues, Tom finished. Under the Americans with Disabilities Act. And we're good at suing. My heart stopped and my purr died down. I looked up at Meg. A little smile curved her lips. She was going to do it. I wasn't so sure it was a good idea. I mean, people are scared of vampires, and with good reason. When people are scared of things, they get mad. Not like cats. We run away. In our lexicon, scaredy cat is the same as smart kitty. The villager mob scene from the old Frankenstein movie came to mind, the whole town storming the castle with torches in the foggy night. Then I imagined them in front of the townhouse. First chance I got, I'd see if the twins had a pet door with a view of the backyard. Tim said, "It isn't all that late," Tom finished, "so let's get started." They sat at two big oak desks that faced each other. My cat's sense of order approved of how tidy each was, with neat stacks of papers and folders. Tim reached for the phone and dialed a number, and Tom woke up his computer. Tim said to the phone, "Can you come over? We've got some work to do." He hung up and told Tom, "On his way." Tom typed and clicked and scrolled and then said, "I was right. There's still time to enter the city council race." This was not a thrill a minute for me. Not that I wanted any more excitement after having bested Lester, and then Sammy's thug, and then almost having my tail cut off. With my bloodlust satisfied, I was thinking a good nap was in order. I also thought people were a little nuts about the whole election thing. Except for sex, or maybe a little mutual grooming, there aren't many reasons for cats to get together. Most of us focus on the stuff of life. Enough to eat, a warm place to nap, and a human associate to take care of opening doors and cans of cat food and things like that. Cats don't have a word for society, or anything else, really, and I'd always found it a difficult concept. Well, people are good companions, too. We've never figured out the bond between humans and cats, mostly because we never think about it, but there it was. So I napped in Meg's lap while Tom and Tim got papers out and made plans, their talk bouncing back and forth like ping-pong balls. Meg joined the murmur now and then, but I was content to doze. People lucky enough to be a cat's associate know that we don't sleep deeply. They're not called cat naps for nothing. We relax almost totally, but there's a little part of our minds that stays alert even though we look like we're sleeping, tuning our ears to sounds like furry sonar scanners. A doorbell brought me out of my nap, and Tim left his desk to answer it. He returned with a short black man. Tim said, "Meg, Seiko, this is Igor Slavinsky." Igor's voice was musical, and his smile bright white and warm. "Pleased to meet you." His gaze settled on me. "Ooh, a kitty cat, too." Meg said, "Patch, meet Igor." Good girl. She instinctively knew that the proper protocol was that the cat always comes first. He came to us and extended a hand toward me, and then paused, his fingers poised as if about to play a melody in the air. I caught a subtle scent I used to get from a gay Persian who lived on my street. Yeah, it's built in, as far as we cats can tell. And who cares? Igor was also definitely not a vampire. He said to Meg, "Can I pet him?" "It's up to him." I never turn down a good petting, so I gave him full eye contact. He got the message and did a few gentle runs down my back. Tim said, "Can you get our friend Meg here registered as a candidate for city council?" Igor's eyebrows tried to meet up with his hairline. He stepped away and studied Meg.
"Nice-looking, professional, young. But isn't she...
Meg said, "Vampire. God, I'm beginning to hate that word." I had to hand it to Igor. Here he was, in a room full of people who had the occasional uncontrollable need to drink blood, and he was cool. Seiko raised a hand.
Isn't it a problem that people think vampires are bloodthirsty, murderous monsters?"
Igor's hands fluttered. "Not all people do." Meg laughed.
"Listen, if W's spin machine could pull off making voters think he was a strong leader, getting them to vote for a vampire should be a day at the beach. Give me a decent media budget, and I can do it."
Shaking her head, Seiko said, "You really think people will vote for a dead person? That's undead. We're not corpses."
"Still, it's a problem. How far can you get with the necrophilia vote? Meg's shoulders dropped. Yeah, I know. She immediately straightened, little fighter that she was. On the bright side, we'll get all the vampire votes, too, and the outcasts. We could be big with the homeless. I bet criminals would support us. Igor fluttered a hand. All the ostracized. You'll get a bunch of the gay vote, too, Tim said. Maybe so, but we need something to humanize her. Meg crossed her arms and legs. I am human. Okay, then unmonsterize you. Tom snapped his fingers. Yes, maybe if you had a running mate, Tim said. I began to wonder if either Tim or Tom ever had a complete thought all by himself. Igor clapped his hands together. Brilliant! Seiko said what I would have said. How are two vampires better than one? Tom said. When one of them is a kitty cat. Oh, no. I hopped off of Meg's lap and, not wanting to signal my intent to scram, did a stretch. Front paws out, tail end high. Stretch my back. Not a bad performance, and it felt great, too. Then, walking as if I was going nowhere in particular, I ambled for the door. Igor, the rat, ambled ahead of me and nudged it closed with his foot. I hate doors. Meg was on her feet and pacing. This is good. If Patch will go along with this. I didn't think so. We'll get all the pet lovers, too. She stopped. I could see it now. I am sitting in front of a fireplace, flames crackling behind me, Patch curled up in my lap. Okay, that part sounded good. And I talked passionately about freedom from tyranny. Seiko chimed in. Don't wear red. Meg came to me and squatted down to pet me. I yielded and lifted my chin for a scratch. She said, Patch, you'll help us change the image of vampires from bats, which are basically rats with wings, to something warm and fuzzy. Great. Now I was going to be the poster pet for blood-sucking fiends. What would my mother have said? Igor said to Meg, I'll register you first thing in the morning. Tim stood. We're on our way. Yeah, but to what? I imagined a throng of happy voters at a vampire rally. They were dancing and chanting, Patch, 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 and Meg. But then the picture darkened and morphed into the crazed villagers from the Frankenstein movie chanting, Burn, burn, burn. The song is Dire Wolf, from Reckoning, by the Grateful Dead. Please don't murder me. For more fun, visit VampireKittyCat.com.